Let's bring in Ryan Kennedy from the Hockey News, who joins us here this morning. How you doing, Ryan?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
You know, I got to say, it is, and I don't mean this in any sort of disrespect in any way, shape, or form, but I have to say, considering that for the better part of the last 3 years since we launched this radio station back in 2017, it's generally been tracking down individuals who can kind of spitball and forecast what the draft looks like, especially near the top as Vancouver's been in this rebuild. It's nice that we haven't had to do a deep dive on draft analysis time and time and time again, but nevertheless, here we are looking at the class of 2020, which it's been suggested that this is a pretty deep group. I guess from a big picture standpoint, how does it look?
It looks pretty solid, and I think there were a few players that really elevated their game this year where it's going to make the decisions tougher when you get into that kind of 8 to 15 range. You know, I look at Jake Sanderson with USA Hockey's National Team Development Program. And, you know, last year the NTDP was so strong, almost the entire team got drafted. And this year it was sort of kind of a meh group. But then Sanderson really elevated his game, and now we're looking at him as kind of a 10 to 15 guy. And, you know, there's a couple of Swedes like William Volander and Helgi Granz that really made the defense prospects deeper than we might have initially thought.
Ryan, in previous drafts, did you see players stock and see them move up two or three spots on a regular basis because of a playoff performance?
Oh, certainly. And not only playoffs, but the World Under-18s is a perfect example of a tournament that was canceled because of the pandemic, where players really, you know, made a charge. You know, you look at Jesperi Kotkaniemi, for example, you know, Montreal, maybe they would have just picked him anyways because he was a center, but, you know, having a good World Under 18 certainly helps.
Ryan Kennedy from the Hockey News with us here on Sportsnet 650. And, you know, when you look at, obviously, the names that going forward, I mean, you look at this particular year, amongst players from the 2019 draft that wound up sticking and playing immediately, you know, the top three selections, Hughes, Kako, Doc, they all played right away. And then a couple of other draft picks later in the, you know, in the first round wound up seeing some games as well. When you look at what is on the table here going forward for this 2020 class, I mean, I'm assuming Lafreniere is a plug-and-play player. He'd be ready to make that jump. But is anybody else, or is Lafreniere even ready to go in next year?
I would definitely pencil in Lafreniere. I think, you know, considering what he did at the World Juniors, but also that he's a late birthday. So, you know, he's got a little more mileage on him. Once he comes into that NHL season, he'll probably already be 18 or close to it. So I would definitely pencil him in. Another name to keep in mind, you know, when I was talking to my scouts, is Marco Rossi from the Ottawa 67s. You know, he might not go top three, top four, but he might be the most NHL-ready player from the OHL, and that counts Quentin Byfield, who is a fantastic prospect, and I believe the number two pick overall. But with Byfield, you know, it's a lot of projection, and, you know, he's already good, but he's going to get even better as he continues to grow and get stronger. But with Marco Rossi, again, you have a late birthday, so he's a 2001 birth year instead of 02, and he just already plays such a solid game all around, along with the skill he brings, that he could probably earn his way onto an NHL roster, depending on which team drafts him.
Ryan Kennedy joining us from the Hockey News, talking about the draft prospects. Ryan, obviously it's different circumstances for everybody, but in your sources, your scouts you talk to, well, most of these teams had vetted their potential number ones, potential first rounders, as far as having that ability to have those conversations. We talk so much about the interview during the combine and what questions did they ask. We won't get that opportunity, and I'm sure they'll do it via Skype or whatnot, but would they have a pretty good feel at this point as to what the character of the player was?
For the most part, and I have been talking to a lot of scouts and execs about this, I think what you're going to see, you're totally right, is a lot more sort of phone calls and maybe even video calls. you know, it's unfortunate because during that draft combine week and even leading up to it, you'll have teams take players out for dinner, you know, sometimes individually, sometimes in little groups. But, you know, they really want to drill down on what these kids are all about personality-wise and what their character is. They're not going to have that opportunity. So they're doing a lot more calls right now, you know, working with the agents and family advisors to set things up that way. And they're also going to have to rely on their regional scouts a lot more, because these regional scouts, they've talked to these kids throughout the year. They've met them in person. They've spent time with them. So they're, you know, the GMs and the directors of amateur scouting, they're going to have to lean on those regional guys a little more this year to say, okay, what's this kid all about? You know, I've seen him play once or twice. I've seen the video, but what kind of kid would we be getting if we select him?
Ryan, I guess you look at where the Ottawa Senators, they could have two potential top five selections. I mean, I guess if they really had some lottery luck, you could be looking at two top three selections. Will they land impact players? Like, could they conceivably hit, you know, two plug-and-play players potentially?
I certainly think they could. And, yeah. I mean, that's the fun thing if you're Pierre Dorion right now is – you get these two picks, you know, one of them could be first overall, and you get Lafreniere who can go in right away. But then you say to yourself, okay, well, do I want two forwards or do I go with Jamie Drysdale, get myself, you know, a top pairing defenseman who is completely set up for today's NHL with the way he moves the puck and how smart he is. Depending on where that pick is, do you even, you know, if it's a little later, do you go with a high-end forward, and do you go with Yaroslav Askarov, the goaltender? Get yourself a goalie of the future.
Yeah, he's supposed to be good. Ryan, how good is he? Because I heard a year ago one coach in junior say he's the best goaltending prospect I have seen in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement. I like to call him the dream killer because for a lot of international tournaments before the World Juniors, whatever team was supposed to win ended up getting beaten by Askarov. You know, we saw it at the Hlinka-Gretzky tournament. We saw it at the World Under-18s the year prior. Yeah, you know, he had a bit of struggle at the World Juniors, but he's still 17. I think that he is certainly in that category. I like him slightly better than Spencer Knight, and
wow.
I'm a huge Spencer Knight fan. I mean, the kid's got everything. And from the scouts that I talked to, and this was even after the World Juniors, they were saying, ah, it's nitpicking. This kid's got everything you want in a starting goaltender. So I almost wonder if he's the kind of goalie where we see him not in 5 to 6 years, but we see him in 2 to 3 years, like a Carter Hart, but bigger.
Ryan, thank you for this. Appreciate it. I think as James was pointing out, it's kind of been fun in Vancouver not to dive so deep into the prospects, because we actually got to focus on a hockey team that was in a playoff race. But at the end of the day, the draft is so important to building. Thanks for your expertise on this. Stay safe, man.
Much appreciated. You too.